through the nation of Israel, right? So therefore, that's why we have more mitzvot. Insofar as the situation is concerned, we have a better situation of perfecting ourselves than the non-Jew. Because one, we're in a, where we have the whole system, and two, because of all the mitzvot, so they're all the ideas, and so therefore we have a better system of perfecting ourselves. So in that way we're better than the non-Jew. But if the non-Jew puts in the work, he can reach a higher level of perfection. In other words, we have the system gives us a better start in perfecting ourselves. So it starts us off, but if somebody starts from a different angle and he's not Jewish, he's not obligated by the mitzvot, since perfection is through learning and knowledge, he could reach a level of perfection, but the problem is the situation where he starts, when he started out, that is the problem. So to start out, the Jew has a certain advantage in the starting out over the non-Jew, but not in the perfection. That he could develop to a very as high as anybody. Okay, one more point about Shlomo. Shlomo, when he built the Beis HaMikdash, so the thing is that the building, the halachic building, was there 100%. But the only thing is the framework in which he made the building, in other words, you see that the framework, the person that's building the building, the Beis HaMikdash, has a certain a level of knowledge and relationship to God. It is that relationship to God that defines the nature of the building. So if the builder does not have the correct relationship to God, the total personality, then there's something wrong with the building itself. You see? So therefore, that's why God was angry. That's why Rashi quotes Yirmiyahu that says God was angry from the very day that he built the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Not because halachically there was anything wrong with the Beis HaMikdash, not because Shlomo's intention about the Beis HaMikdash was wrong, but what was wrong was he himself, his level for building the Beis HaMikdash was incorrect. So his relationship to the Beis, since he was the builder, his relationship to the building defines what the building is, and therefore the building, that's what God hated, God was angry from the time that he built it. Now the question is does tefillah work? Let's say I'm not on the level my soul is not perfected, and since that affects all my actions, so the question is, does tefillah work? You understand, for a person that's imperfected? The answer is that yes. Because we know that, Chazal held that definitely tefillah works, and it doesn't make a distinction whether you perfect it or not. Not tefillah is all worthless to anybody except the person on that level. So therefore, why should people pray? So the answer is, you must say that God made a special halacha that tefillah works. Is that correct? Okay? So tefillah works even if you're not on the level. Okay? Even though your framework is totally wrong and totally imperfected, but the fact is that God will listen to your tefillah. The question is why? Really, he shouldn't, right? The question is, why did God do this? My view is that he did that so people would study tefillah, and tefillah will help them develop to a higher level. So therefore, if you know that tefillah works, so that will get you to be involved in tefillah. If you're involved in tefillah, then maybe you'll sit down and study tefillah. You study tefillah, and then when you go over the ideas again and again through the tefillah, so that will help perfect your soul. So therefore, he made a special hashgacha, even though in reality it shouldn't work. He said, no, I'll make it work anyway, and I can listen to a tefillah, even though the person is not on the level, to help him perfect the soul. The question is, what's the cure for laziness? Okay, we might have put this on tape before, I don't remember. But anyway, the thing is that let's say a person is sitting in the middle of the street and he sees a truck a mile away going 70 miles an hour. Would he be too lazy to get out of the way? The answer is that when most people are rational when it pertains to their five senses, because the five senses is real to them, but ideas are not real to them. So therefore, when you are lazy, it means that this idea is not real to you. If you want to undo the laziness, you must get involved in studying the idea to make sure it's really clear in the mind. That when you see the consequences and the mind dictates and the mind is real to you, then you can operate on it. You see? If a person really accepts that the Torah was given by God, and then he sins, okay? So that shows a certain imperfection, right? Okay. So the question is, what is the definition, what is the idea of imperfection? Okay, let's give an example. Let's say, for instance, that how good your parents are to you, right? What they do for you and what they did for you in the past. But one day they say you can't go out with your friends. Very important night. All your friends are going to do something important, but you're grounded. And at that moment, in your anger, you think they're the worst people in the world, right? Right. So therefore, you see emotions blind you to reality. That is imperfection. Imperfection, there's two types of imperfection. One is I don't have knowledge of reality. I don't know the reality. I don't know the truth. Let's say I don't know that God is not physical. I read the Torah, seems that God is physical, and I make a mistake, and I think God is physical. That I don't have the knowledge. But then there is an emotion which blinds you for that moment that the emotion is awakened. It blinds you to the truth. It makes the truth not real to you, and therefore that is the imperfection, and those are the dangerous situations that can harm you, because it's not real to you during the when the emotion is awakened. The reality is not real to you. In other words, a minute before the emotion was awakened, it's real. The truth is aware. You're really aware of the truth, but however, once the emotion is awakened, it covers the truth. And now you hold the opposite of the truth. And it's as if you're ignorant for this moment of what the truth is. If the emotion passes, then you'll come, when you get over the anger, then you come back and you really see. In fact, you wonder, how did I ever think that my parents so bad? I have to understand that. But yet the emotion blinded you at that moment. So therefore, it makes you ignorant during the time of the emotion. If the emotion becomes very powerful, then it can change your view even afterwards. And it can change your view forever. And that's it. Then that becomes your view. The incorrect view. That's the danger of emotions. Right. Now, we're doing Kuf Chav Ches and Tilim Pasuk Aleph. Okay? It says, the song of ascent, happy is all that fear God, anybody that fears God, and goes in his ways. Okay? Suraj says that the call is to add a man and woman, that any human being that follows the fear of God, so he will have the benefits. He will be ashrei, he'll be happy. He'll be happy with his life. Okay? Pasuk Bez says, Yigia kapecha, the work of your hands, kisochal, you should eat the work of your hands. In other words, you should take the responsibility to go out and work. Ashrecha, then you'll be happy, v'tovloch, and everything will be good. Now Rashi says, he who enjoys, he who is satisfied, who is happy with the work of his hands, he inherits two worlds. Two worlds means this world, Olam Hazeh, and Olam Haba, the world to come. And this is in Brachos. This is a quote of a Gemara in Brachos. Right? Now the question is like this. First of all, the first question is, what does this have to do with fear of God? I mean, if you tell me the consequences of laziness and the results of working with your hands and doing it, that belongs to Mishlei. It doesn't belong in Tilim. Okay? And it definitely, this Eric is dealing with the fear of the God, fear of God, because that's what it says in the first pasuk, that it's talking about the fear of God. And in the second pasuk, he talks about, like, Yigir Kafecha, the work of my hands. So the question is, what does the work of my hands have to do with the fear of God? What is it doing in Tillim? It doesn't belong here. And Rashi gives the hint when he says, Hanene, somebody that enjoys and he is happy with the work of his hands. In other words, two people could do the work. One is lazy and one enjoys working with his hands. Now, insofar as Mishle is concerned, could be the guy that does a lazy guy. He does a good job, he'll get good results, as long as he doesn't act on his laziness. But here Rashi is saying it's not acting on your laziness, but it's you enjoy your work. Now, the lazy person, even if he forces himself to do a good job, he'll be successful physically, but he'll definitely hate it. He'll definitely hate the work. He would prefer just having the result, while he enjoys the work of his hands. So the question is, what is the enjoyment of work? What does that have to do with the fear of God and with the world to come? The first thing we have to ask is this: the thing is, there are people that enjoy their profession, you see, and they don't fear God, you see. So we're not talking about that I enjoy my profession. It's the practicality. He enjoys working for the practical. In other words, so that, like the pasuk says, so that he could eat. In other words, wherever there's a practicality, he's happy to work out the practicality, and he's happy to work on the practical until he gets the result. You see? It's not just that I enjoy my profession, but it's the enjoyment of the practical. Lazy person can't enjoy practicality. Okay? Now, Rachel wants to answer like this. If I can't enjoy my work, then I will not be able to enjoy learning either. What's the difference? And so, therefore, a lazy person by nature, any type of work he's going to turn away from. So therefore, when it comes to learning, he won't put his full energy into it, because it's conflict. Because he's fighting. One part of him doesn't want to work. One part of him wants to learn. So therefore, he's caught in this conflict. While the other person that lives the life of practicality, so therefore he enjoys the practical, so he can enjoy the life of learning. Okay? That is a very good answer. Very good answer. We'd also like to give another one, okay? Another answer. And that is this. We said yesterday, like, for instance, the lazy person, he's sitting in the street and he sees a truck coming, he will not be lazy to get out of the way, right? It will not bother him that he has to run out of the way. You see, he'll just go automatically. You see, why is that? Because it's real to him. It's real that he has to do it. But sometimes you have to do things where the idea is not real to you. In a certain sense, it's real, but emotionally, sometimes it's not completely real to you. You see? Now, if it's not completely real to you, then why do I have to do it? What drives me to do it if it's not real? You have to say that it's an authority figure in my mind that is forcing me to do it. Some authority is forcing me to do it. The conscience or superego, you understand, that's driving me to do it. I was raised that way. So therefore, I'm in conflict with this authority figure that's in my mind. You see? That authority figure is idolatry. That's Avodah Zarah. That's the whole idea of Avodah Zarah, is that I have certain authorities that are over me and control me, and I have to constantly be in battle and in conflict with. You see? That is idolatry of the heart. It's not a luchic idolatry. Luchic idolatry is, I mean, you bow down to a piece of wood. But this is not halachic idolatry, but this is idolatry of the heart, you see. But however, if I see it, if I see what I have to, when I notice that practicality is just a reality, it is no different than getting out of the way of the truck. You see? No different at all. You see? That means I'm not doing, my life is not guided by this type of authority, but it's guided by practicality. If it's guided by practicality, that means there's no authority that's forcing me to do it. It's practicality. That means that I don't have the Avodah Zarah in me. There's no idolatrous part of me that's a part of me. You see? So therefore, if I feel forced to do it, why am I in conflict? Because one part, well, everybody, whenever they have an authority, they don't understand why they're doing it. So even though they obey the authority, there's still a conflict, you see? So if you have a conflict about carrying out reality, that shows that really it's a conflict between the authority, the superego, or the conscience, between that and between yourself, and you don't want to do it, between the other part of you. That's the conflict. But if I enjoy the practicality, it means it's not a conflict. I have to do it, so I do it. It's no different than getting out of the way of a truck. I'm sick. I got to go to the doctor. Finish. That's it. There's no conflict when it's a reality. So therefore, if I do all my practicality because it's a reality, it means that I do not have any superego, any conscience, any authority figure over me. So therefore, I could relate totally to God. That comes from the fear of God. That is fear of God. That shows the result of the fear of God, that you don't have that conflict. And that will definitely give you both worlds. One, this world, you don't have the conflict. And then secondly, I have a chelek in Olam Haba, because I don't have any image of idolatry. There's no image of idolatry, even in my unconscious. There's no image of idolatry. So therefore, I have a chelek in Olam Haba. The difference between the two answers is, the first answer is, practically, if I'm a lazy person, if it affects me in one area, it'll affect me in another area, which is really true, and therefore it'll affect my fear of God. That's absolutely true. The other thing is shown inherently, the conflict between the two types of people, how it relates directly to God, how both emotions are directly related to God, either idolatry or the real God. We're trying to clarify laziness, okay? And to clarify laziness, we have to know what is laziness, okay? So laziness is that, laziness is where you look at the, laziness is where it is not important to me. Laziness is where the thing that I am doing, I don't really see the importance of it, okay? So the question is, in other words, like, let's say, for instance, a person is going to school, right? So you ask him, is school important? He'll say, yeah. So then you'll ask him, so then why aren't you work on it? So say, I'm lazy. Now, the question is, how could he say it's important and simultaneously be lazy? Like, I'll give you an example. Let's say, for instance, this kid was playing in the street and a truck a mile away is going 70 miles an hour. Would he be too lazy to get out of the road? No. Now, he knows the consequences of not getting going to school will be that he'll have to be get a job as a checker in a supermarket. You know what I mean? Like, he can't get far without college these days, okay? So the thing is that he knows the consequences, but yet it's not important. How could it be not important? What's the difference between the person in the street that sees the car and the person that could be lazy about school? Okay, what's the difference between the two? Now we want to say that, for instance, a child of around 3 years old, let's say you're training him to look both ways when he crosses the street. Now, when he reaches the point where he goes by himself, So when he looks two ways, so he's thinking of his parents, okay? So how is he thinking of his parents? He's thinking that either he'll be punished by them if he doesn't look two ways, or he'll be loved by them or rewarded or looked up to if he does look two ways. So therefore, the reason why he looks two ways is because of his parents. Now, we hope by the time the child turns 15, the child will look both ways because he sees the reality. Okay? So now this lazy person, when he says, I know the importance of school, it's not that he truly knows the importance of school. It is because that's the way he was raised. In other words, he is doing it because of his society and because of his parents and because of his peers. So there's a competition between his peers. These are the things that motivate him. But it can't be reality, okay? So the question is it only the lazy person that doesn't see reality or a person that's also working on it? No, the difference, I say the person that's even working on it, that works very hard, is also not doing it because of reality, because we see many contradictions of areas of the person's life where he lives in contradiction. Like, for instance, he says he doesn't smoke because he's healthy, because he wants to be healthy. Yet he'll eat chemicals or eat food that's chemicals that are in the food, and he'll eat food that is not healthy. You understand, the cold cuts are supposed to be the real fatty part, and they put in different things, you know. It's not supposed to be the healthy. A health person would not eat that type of thing. So the thing is you see many contradictions in the person that even though he says he sees things long term, it's really not the long term. It's basically the propaganda of the society. Okay, all right. So therefore, we say that the person is not looking at it longer term. There is a Gemara that says that Tana, an author of the Talmud, was making fun of Ahav, the king of Israel that worshipped idols. And that night Ahav came to him in a dream and says, if you were in my generation, you'd have grabbed onto my coattail and ran to idolatry. So the next day he says, my teacher Ahav. Okay? So you see that that society that you're raised in plays a large part in who you're going to be. Okay, now the question is, so therefore, when it comes, now the thing is when it comes to the far, okay, so the question is how do you cure how do you cure yourself to be able to do it from reality and to see the reality and therefore cure your laziness, or do it from reality and cure your contradictions that seem to plague us, okay? That is the question. Now, we notice that a person, when it comes to his five senses, he, like the example of the child playing in the road, and he sees the truck coming, he knows that he's not lazy in that situation, okay? So we notice that there's a certain sense of reality that most human beings have that attach to the five senses. In other words, I'm not talking about a psychotic. Psychotic, I mean, of course, is a person that has no sense of reality. I'm talking about most people have a sense of reality, and that sense of reality attaches to the five senses, okay? Now, what we have to do is extend that sense of reality to the world of ideas, where ideas, even though I'm not experiencing it, it is real. You see, even though I'm not experiencing the idea, but it's only in my mind, but it is real. Okay? That is what we have to do, and the question is, how do you do it? In other words, these ideas are here that people know, but their sense of reality doesn't extend to it. In other words, like this. There are people that know that if they would go to the beach and they're light-skinned, The first day of summer, they're going to get a burn. Yet many people don't protect themselves when they go out to the beach. Now, they know this information. The kid knows that he has to go to college to make to have a profession, right? But it's not real to him. You see, it is not. There's a sense of reality that is missing. It doesn't mean if he doesn't have a sense of reality, then I don't think we could help him. I mean, then you need a professional, maybe chemical changes or whatever they do, if possible, to change it. But I'm saying we're talking about a person that has a sense of reality, at least in the five senses. And most people have that. But they have to extend that sense of reality to the world of ideas. In fact, a lot of the facts you do know, you see. But the question is, how do you extend the sense of reality? So the question is, how does the mind work? Okay, how does the mind see things? How does the mind understand things? The answer is, the mind sees things by steps. Okay? In other words, they see things, you have a fact, and you abstract the fact. Then when you people ask a question, let's say we're having a discussion, and you ask me a question, what you're saying is there's some step missing, or there's a fact that contradicts what one of the steps of what you're saying, you see? So then when we straighten that out, so then the mind sees it again until it comes to the next contradiction, okay? Or until we fill in we answer all the questions, then the mind sees clearly. So the mind sees through seeing different steps, okay? So therefore, a person has to first train himself in the world of steps to see things clearly and to always question as soon as a step is missing. Okay? In other words, like this. Let's say, for instance, you would sit down and study Euclidean geometry, any geometry, okay? And you would start from the proposition, you'd move and have certain steps to prove the first proposition, right? And you think through in your mind, you don't accept because you're reading it, but you think through every step, is every step really there, or is this step missing? Like, for instance, if you go through Euclidean geometry, you'll find there's throughout the whole book, maybe around, I think if I remember, somebody said there were four places where he skips a step. And the thing is, if you go through very carefully on every step, you'll find at a certain point that you find there's a step missing. You could find it. You could actually find a step missing. Okay? Well, the first thing is, in other words, the order would be, the first thing is either study Talmud, which is a training of the mind, or for other people, you know, like geometry would be a good training, you see? So, today we have many different geometries. You could study the different geometries just for the purpose, not of becoming a geometrician, but for the purpose of the training of the mind. Also, another good book happens to be The Dialogues of Plato. So, because there it's cross-examination, it goes step by step. So it's also whether you agree with his philosophy or not is not the problem. But the thing is just to learn to question step by step and how to analyze things. There's different books. Basically, Talmud, Plato, and Geometry is probably the best books for the training of seeing things in sequence, and to make sure every step is there when you analyze things. So there must be a training of the mind. The question is when you ask a question, and because the step is missing, is that a natural thing, or is that a training? The answer is both. You must have a sense of reality, like I said, so that you notice, and once you start thinking about things, so you will notice things naturally. But however, there is a training to perfect it. That's why I say these studies that we just mentioned, these studies will help you if you get involved. If you have a teacher that guides you, or you study these subjects, and so you could develop that sense of checking out every single step and to see every single step, and you force yourself to think correctly. You see what I mean? You force yourself to think. In other words, you train yourself to start. See, as you develop, so your mind opens, so then you think, then you notice steps are missing, so you automatically ask the question where the step is missing. That is the first step that you need to overcome laziness, is that training. The second step that you need is the study of everyday life and to be able to make decisions despite your emotions. In other words, that is where the reality really comes in, where you're able to make decisions, even though your emotions are contrary to the rationale, your mind is still able to see the truth and to be able to make decisions and live by that idea. You see, that is the subject of Musa. So that is the two studies that a person needs to develop. Now, and therefore I say that it's not that you're a chacham in one place or another, it's a change in the very nature from the sense of reality which starts out in life that attaches to the five senses, and then it extends to the world of ideas. Now, that is the way a person develops. That sense of reality over ideas, where he becomes what the Pirkei Avos says, Ezu Chacham, Haroas Anolad, who is wise, who sees the future. Okay, and we said before, why does it say see? Because it's equal to your five senses. Because everybody, most people, have a sense of reality to their five senses. Now you have to extend that sense of reality to the world of ideas that the sense of reality that attaches to your mind is equal to your five senses, and once it's equal to your five senses, so then when there's going to be a consequence, it's equal to the truck that's only a mile away, even though the consequence might be 10 years down the pike. Okay. A student asked me, the question is, why is Torah study so complicated? Why did God make it so hard on us? Why didn't God just, make it easy for us and it shouldn't be so complicated? Okay. The answer is like this. There are many reasons for studying Torah. Most of them are incorrect, an incorrect view, an incorrect purpose of studying Torah. That's in the Hebrew, it's lo lishma. Okay? So, the motive could be ego. The motive could be that I want to be known as a Talmud Chacham, as a wise person. The motive for learning could be because I'm a religious person. Okay? Now, all these motives drive you to study Torah. Okay? But, however, if your motive is only to extend, you see, if your motive is only to extend the sense of reality to your to the world of ideas, then you know that the only way that you're going to extend that sense of reality is when the ideas are 100% clear and every question has been answered.